This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Hey, guess what? Second Look is now 2 years old. We begin our first weekly roundup of WMRA news on the first Sunday in February 2015. How time flies. So grab a piece of cake and stay with us for the next half hour. You may not be surprised that politics plays a big role in the week's news in Virginia, given that we're approaching crossover day in the General Assembly. We're going to talk about what that's all about, some analysis. And we'll have a more focused look by WMRA's Emily Richardson-Lorente at the abortion-related measures being considered in the legislature. And local communities erupted in protests this week over the president's order restricting immigration. Jordy Ager and Christopher Clymer-Kurtz have reports. Also, a big week for Virginia Military Institute, which welcomed someone who had a big role in forcing a transformation on the school 20 years ago. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the Supreme Court opinion that declared VMI's male-only admissions policy unconstitutional, and she visited the Institute on Wednesday. WMRA's Jesse Nadler was there. But first, in cities and airports across the nation last Sunday, protesters responded to the order signed by President Trump that bans immigrants from seven countries with Muslim majorities and keeps refugees out. The grassroots reaction was swift. In Charlottesville on Sunday, WMRA's Jordy Ager filed this report from the UVA grounds.
About 700 people gathered outside the University of Virginia's Rotunda Sunday to protest a recent series of executive orders issued by President Donald Trump. The actions take aim at immigrants in the U.S. illegally, while also temporarily halting the arrival of refugees and issuing a 90-day ban on citizens traveling from seven predominantly Muslim countries. A group of UVA students over the weekend wrote University President Teresa Sullivan. Sophomore Hannah Melissa Borja read the open letter before Sunday's crowd. She is a member of the Dreamers on Grounds, a UVA group that advocates for undocumented students.
We demand that you, as a university, take long overdue action. Prove to your students that you care, that you stand behind them, and that you will protect their access.
Several other students spoke, as did Charlottesville Vice Mayor Wes Bellamy. The crowd marched down the UVA lawn, circled through campus, and rallied in front of the Dean of Students' office. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
And on the same day, WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz was at the protest rally in Harrisonburg.
If the Sunday noon rally on Harrisonburg's Court Square sounds like it was spontaneous and impassioned, that's because it was.
My name is Erin Murray, and I just organized this yesterday afternoon.
Even before a sound system arrived, a handful of speakers took to the courthouse steps to address the hundreds who were gathering, including Harrisonburg City Schools Superintendent Scott Kisner.
We always say that the strength of our school system is our diversity. We accept everyone and we love everyone.
Rebecca Sprague, Community Program Coordinator for Church World Service.
We have 14 people on our list that had flights scheduled that are not going to be able to come now.
Sabre Koshnal is from Northern Iraq.
My son-in-law today in Kurdistan of Iraq. It's impossible. Yesterday he's American with my daughter citizen and granddaughter citizen. And somebody tell them you are not American today.
Jim Moore raised a cherry picker over the street with a large banner proclaiming immigration built our nation and one nation without fear, without hate.
Immigration built our nation.
Moore said he's had a hard time listening to the news recently.
I hate to see everybody drinking the Kool-Aid.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
Immigration built our nation.
Then, on Tuesday, Charlottesville city officials took it a step further. Here's Jordy's report.
Several hundred people gathered outside Charlottesville City Hall at noon on Tuesday to support local refugees and immigrants. Before the large crowd, more than a dozen speakers lined up, including religious leaders, refugee advocates, and the wife of Virginia's lieutenant governor. Charlottesville Mayor Mike Signer called the event because he worried refugees were getting the wrong impression.
They are hearing the message that America does not want them here. I could not disagree more strongly. They are exactly the people that we need here.
Signer said staff from the offices of Democratic Senators Tim Kaine and Mark Warner has committed to provide local refugees with casework assistance as needed. Local attorneys and law students will also be available. The city, he said, will stand by its refugees and immigrants.
And that is why I'm here today, to declare that Charlottesville, the historic home of Thomas Jefferson, is a capital of the resistance.
Local resident Keezer Khan came to fame at the Democratic National Convention last year after offering to lend a pocket-sized constitution to Trump.
On Tuesday, he told the crowd not to give up hope.
This dark chapter in the history of this country will never be written as long as these patriots are standing and speaking. Stand next to one another. Stand next to your brother and sister so that they will not be harmed.
For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg visited Virginia Military Institute in Lexington on Wednesday. The visit was significant because Justice Ginsburg had a profound impact on the school by writing the majority opinion in a landmark case that forced the all-male institute to admit women. WMRA's Jesse Nadler examined the impacts of that case, and then she attended the event. Here's her report.
Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg doesn't really do public appearances. She's not known for giving interviews. So it's really telling that the 83-year-old justice is coming to VMI to speak before the entire Corps of Cadets on Wednesday. The VMI case is called United States versus Virginia, and Justice Ginsburg wrote the majority opinion that found the state-run school's all-male admission policy to be unconstitutional. It's regarded as her most important decision on the high court.
The VMI case was, in some ways, the culmination of all of her work.
Irene Carmone is co-author of Notorious RBG.
Long before Justice Ginsburg was a Supreme Court justice, she was an important women's rights litigator. She co-founded the ACLU Women's Rights Project, and she actually transformed our constitutional understanding of gender. Before she got to work, it was completely illegal for the government to discriminate on the basis of gender.
VMI's remedy at the time was to start a sister program at Mary Baldwin. But Justice Ginsburg wrote that would be a pale shadow in terms of course offerings, faculty, funding, prestige, and alumni support for women. The ruling was met with major opposition from VMI's passionate alumni base and all-male core. But administrators knew they had to get on board to avoid the mistakes made by the Citadel when trying to assimilate women a few years prior. Here's VMI spokesman Stuart Mackinnis.
When the Supreme Court made that ruling, VMI embraced the ruling and set about doing the best job it could integrating women into the Corps.
They had no choice but to embrace the ruling, but that was it. The school wasn't going to change anything else.
VMI didn't like to use the word co-education.
Laura Brody is the author of Breaking Out, VMI and the Coming of Women. She was one of the few women to sit in on executive meetings regarding the transition at the time.
They said that the Supreme Court did not require them to create a system of education that was made for men and women. All the Supreme Court required of them was to let women enter their culture as it was.
The physical standards were exactly the same. The PT standards were exactly the same.
Gussie Lord, class of 01, was part of that first wave of female cadets. She was an English major and is now an environmental lawyer in D.C.
We were expected to, you know, sort of act exactly like the guys did. And I think that's fine, but I think it's not realistic.
Still, she rose to the occasion.
Personally, I did feel like I had a responsibility from a feminist standpoint to do a good job to the women who would follow us, to sort of set the tone and set the standard and show that, you know, we could succeed at VMI.
Today, women make up a mere 11% of the student body. So it is still pretty much a men's college. But for those who get through it, a VMI diploma, especially for women, can carry a lot of weight.
Some of the things she said in that case, for example, VMI having a reputation that provides specific benefits to its graduates, I think are true. I think my VMI diploma has opened up a lot of doors for me. My VMI experience has stayed with me. I always have been, and I always will be grateful to have had that experience.
Lord is one of a few female alumni who will be attending Wednesday's event. Army Major Angela Scott, class of 01, who now works for a general and heads to work at the Pentagon this summer, will be there with her two young daughters in tow.
At the time, I was too naive and sheltered to realize the impact that Justice Ginsburg had on everything and the impact she would have on my life. But I can tell you that since then, I've been a very quiet but passionate advocate for equal opportunity, you know, not just for women, but across the board. So getting to see someone that had such a large part of igniting a fire in me is a pretty neat experience.
The national political climate right now is anxious and uneasy. But Justice Ginsburg didn't come to VMI on Wednesday to talk about that, at least not directly. She mostly talked about the VMI case and her long legal career. But she did make a pointed reference to the Red Scare of the 1950s.
It was not a good time for the United States. Our country was straying from its most basic values, and those are the right to think, speak, and write as you believe, and not as a big brother government tells you is the right way to think or believe.
The applause that followed suggested some parallels to the growing national mood today. Among the packed auditorium were 200 female cadets who wouldn't be at VMI were it not for Justice Ginsburg. She wrote the majority opinion in the case United States versus Virginia that found the school's single-sex admission policy to be unconstitutional.
That all doors must be open to our sons and daughters, and they will choose to enter those doors if they have the will and the talent to do so.
She herself entered the door many years ago of Harvard Law School, where she was one of 9 women in a class of 500 men.
You felt you were constantly on display. So if you were called on in class, you felt that if you failed, if you didn't perform well, you were failing not just for yourself, but for all women.
That experience hit home with Rachel Peterson, class of 01, the first co-ed class at VMI. She traveled from Pennsylvania to see Justice Ginsburg in person.
That's exactly it. You are on display. And, you know, in being in class where you have, you know, 15, 20 cadets, you're the only woman in the class. And, you know, the professor would even kind of put you on the spot. Well, let's get the female perspective. And then everybody would just zone in on you. And it's like, oh, I have to speak for the entire gender. When she said that, all these memories flooded back.
For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
During the presidential debates, then-candidate Donald Trump pledged to send abortion, quote, back to the states. That means that regardless of what ultimately happens with the Supreme Court and Roe v. Wade, advocates on both sides of the abortion issue should be paying close attention to what's happening in their state legislature. And here in Virginia, there's a lot going on in the area of women's reproductive rights and health. WMRA's Emily Richardson-Lorente reports.
The Senate will come to order. The senators will please take their seats.
Since Virginia's legislative session began on January 11th, state lawmakers have introduced 11 abortion-related bills. Only 3 of the 11 are actually championed by anti-abortion advocates, but they include 2 big pro-life priorities, cutting funding to Planned Parenthood and banning abortion after 20 weeks. On the flip side, 2 pro-choice bills are aimed at defining and expanding access to contraception, and 6 other bills would essentially roll back existing regulations that abortion rights advocates deem harmful and unnecessary. 4 of those bills have actually already failed.
The restrictions that we've seen in Virginia are a way of chipping away access to abortion. Roe v. Wade is just being gutted.
That's Gail Dady. She's a lawyer at the ACLU of Virginia. Her group has argued against mandatory ultrasounds, 24-hour waiting periods, and other state regulations that they feel impinge on a woman's right to abortion.
When you look at each of those little restrictions piece by piece, someone may think, oh, that sounds reasonable, that will protect women's health. But in reality, they're just about the end goal, and the end goal is to make abortion illegal.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to see a court that looks at it and reverses Roe.
That second voice is Victoria Cobb, longtime president of the Virginia-based Family Foundation, a conservative Christian advocacy and lobbying group.
You never have a bill that just bans abortion in all cases, but the goal is you're moving the ball forward, you're making progress, you're saving unborn lives.
One of the bills the Family Foundation has lobbied for is House Bill 2264, which, among other things, would effectively eliminate state funding for Planned Parenthood. That bill advanced out of subcommittee on Tuesday and will likely see a full House vote next week. The foundation has also lobbied for House Bill 1473. The bill dubbed the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. That would ban abortions after 20 weeks, midway through a woman's second trimester. The current limit in Virginia is about 24 weeks, the so-called point of viability. One big challenge with pulling that back a month?
Oftentimes, an anomaly is not diagnosed until 20 weeks.
That's Jill Abbey, administrator at the Medical Center for Women, which runs 4 of the 14 clinics that perform abortions in Virginia. She's been working with pregnant patients for 26 years and says she sees four or five women a week who are dealing with fetal abnormalities, some catastrophic.
Heart defects, fetuses without a brain, fetuses where there's no amniotic fluid, and so the lungs cannot develop, and a woman could carry that pregnancy all the way to term, and the baby suffocates. Just, you know, just an amazing amount of things that would cause, you know, a woman to be referred to us for a second trimester procedure, and oftentimes just beyond the 20-week mark.
The 20-week abortion ban bill will come up for consideration in the House's Committee for Courts of Justice soon. If it ultimately passes, advocates on both sides fully expect Governor McAuliffe to veto it, as he has pledged to do with the Planned Parenthood funding cuts.
I will veto that. I will not allow these bills to attack women or anyone else.
Another bill up for consideration in the House Committee on Commerce and Labor is House Bill 2267. This would allow Virginia women to receive a 12-month supply of birth control with a single prescription. Advocates for the bill point to data showing that this could reduce unintended pregnancies by as much as 30% and abortions by as much as 46%. A similar bill was introduced in the Virginia Senate last year by Senator Mamie Locke, but it died in committee.
It's another form of hypocrisy on the part of those who say that they are pro-life. Why not try to prevent unplanned pregnancies?
Locke has been a Virginia state senator for 13 years. She's proudly pro-choice and believes most Virginians are as well. But
at every turn, a woman's right to make choices about her health care are being restricted primarily by men.
The clerk of the Senate will call the roll of the Senate.
Senator Barker.
While men do outnumber women in the General Assembly by more than 5-1, they're not the only ones voting against abortion.
I'm pro-life. I would prefer there never to have to be another abortion, ever.
That's Senator Siobhan Dunavant, a first-term senator and one of seven pro-life women in the General Assembly. She's also a practicing OBGYN.
And I do have an advantage with the credibility of being an OBGYN to help frame the conversation where we can find consensus. And that would make me happy because I'd like to think we weren't doing things like having abortions after 20 weeks when we just don't need to.
There's no doubt that later term abortions energize advocates on both sides of the issue. But take a close look at the numbers tracked by the Virginia Department of Health, and you'll see that of the 19,000 abortions Virginia women received in 2014, less than half of 1% occurred at 20 weeks or later. For WMRA News, I'm Emily Richardson-Lorente.
An update on the story since it originally aired on Thursday. The House Commerce and Labor Committee unanimously approved the 12-month contraception bill. While the House Courts of Justice Committee announced that it won't hold a hearing for the abortion-related bills it was supposed to consider. Now it's time to wrap up the show with a review of happenings in the General Assembly. Here's Craig Carper at our partner station WCVE in Richmond discussing the week's news from the state capitol with Jeff Shapiro, political columnist with the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Democrats and progressive activists were turning the heat on Republicans for killing legislation without full committee hearings.
This is becoming a standard operating procedure, particularly in the Republican-controlled House. But I think you have in mind in this instance a handful of abortion bills, pro and con. Courts Committee Chairman Dave Albo of Fairfax Republicans said he's not interested in taking up these bills that really aren't going to go anywhere. Among them was a Republican bill that would ban abortion, essentially all forms of abortion, after 20 weeks. This is taking place just as the President of the United States announces his pick for a vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. And one of the things on which President Trump at least is committed is returning the issue of abortion to the states. I don't know that Republican candidates in a House election year, even in these safe districts, or gubernatorial candidates want to spend a lot of time talking about abortion rights in a state that is suburban dominated, in which women make up the majority of the electorate, and in which there is a good deal of support for abortion rights. And P.S., a lot of these bills, especially anything imposing a restriction on abortion rights, if it gets to the governor, Terry McAuliffe, you know he's going to veto it, and he's going to enjoy the crowing rights as well.
And a lot of activity in the rush up to crossover. That's the procedural deadline where legislation must be completed by the House and Senate, each chamber of its origin, before it crosses across the hall.
there's a lot moving on both sides. For example, the Republicans seem to be drawing a line in the sand with McAuliffe over reforms to the Economic Development Agency. There's been a lot of concern about money misspent or opportunities blown. Actually, it's a problem for which both parties are responsible. There are also further restrictions on access to the polls by four voters. Republicans in the House rammed through a bill that would require one provide proof of citizenship before registering to vote. Against the governor, you know that one's going to be vetoed as well. But maybe there's a bit of a progressive reflex, even in this Republican-dominated legislature. The Senate, which has a slender Republican majority, seems to be cool on the idea of lessening some of these restrictions that result in people facing drunken driving charges, facing piles of fines and penalties from other offenses, losing their driving privileges. And the Senate has sent a bill to the House that seems to kind of dial back on some of that. There seems to be some interest there. Of course, the governor is interested in that as well.
And Dave Bratt getting some criticism for being inaccessible. This is the same charge he leveled against Eric Cantor 2 years ago, sweeping him to victory.
Yes, the 7th District Congressman, whose victory over Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, augured the Trump victory for presidency in that there was this great populist revolt against the establishment Republicans. His Democratic constituents here in the Richmond area say he's only interested in meeting with the kinds of people who vote for him, and that includes Hanover County Tea Partiers. And there was a meeting up there over the weekend, and from it emerged a secret video in which the congressman had a number of untoward things to say about his critics. He trashed Obamacare. That's probably not all that surprising, but in the course of this soliloquy, he talked about how there were basically paid protesters on the Democratic side and how women were, as he put it, getting in his grill in Facebook posts in which they expressed their objections to his hostility to the ACA. Bratt has promised to be accessible and has restated his commitment to be more accessible after Trump's first 100 days. But there seems to be a flaw in all of this in that some of his ink-stained wretches and also some online enthusiasts discovered that Congressman Bratt's making time to go out to Arizona at the end of February to appear with a fellow member of the Freedom Caucus. So it seems that whether it's in Virginia or whether it's in the American Southwest, Dave Bratt does have a preference for people who think the way he does and vote the way he likes.
Thanks to Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Jeff, we will talk again next week.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bip and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Pam and Jim Huggins, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about how we fund our news and how you can help, go to WMRA.org, mouse over news, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at WMRA.org. I'm Bob Livicki, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.